It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios. Welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
What we've done is we've really managed Obamacare, the remaining portion. We got rid of the bad part, but the remaining portion really well. And, you know, before I got involved, you know what was happening with the rates on Obamacare? They were going up at levels that nobody's ever seen before. We are managing it. And I had a decision to make. This was very important. I said to my people, and we have great people, Seema, Azar, I mean, great people that are so good at it. I said, you know, I have a little problem. Do we manage it great until we get something much better? Or do we manage it poorly and say Obamacare is horrible? And I said, we've got to do the right thing. We've got to manage it really, really good. So it's not great health care, but we're managing it fantastically. And you don't see all those stories about the rates going through the roof anymore because we know what we're doing. At the same time, we want to get you really fantastic health care. If we can win back the House, we'll be able to do that. We have to win back the House, keep the Senate, keep the White House. We'll be able to do that.
All right. Sandy Rios with you on this Monday. That was President Trump and a town hall on Fox Thursday night. I don't know if you saw that, but it really was so good. It was just to hear the president speak without people pulling out clips and moments and editing and seeing him just respond to questions as people ask them is actually very good. It's very good for all of us. The thing that I noticed is the people in the audience, even if they were skeptics, because I believe this was in Scranton, Pennsylvania. So that's Joe Biden territory. That's where he was born. Even people who were sitting behind listening suddenly just started warming up and everyone was laughing. And because President Trump is actually pretty funny. And a lot of the things that they pull out that he says that sound lifted out of context sound very brash and whatever word you want to put to them. Put in context, sometimes he's just funny. So it was fun. We will post that on our Facebook page so that you can watch it. I think you would enjoy it. And of course, at the top of the news, they talked about this, of our news, they talked about the Pew Research Center finding that few Americans express positive views of Trump's conduct in office. And that was one of the questions that was asked in that town hall was a very, a Trump supporter, very nice looking, well-dressed businessman, basically ask President Trump about civility in politics and how the challenging President Trump on the way he addresses people. President Trump's response was actually, if you heard it in context, and I wish I'd ask Adam to pull it, but I didn't this morning. But basically, the president said, look, I am in a fight for my life. Everyone is after me, all the press, all the left. That's all you hear. If I did not fight back, I would not be here. And if I did not fight back, you would not be supporting me. And so that was his defense of any criticism that people feel. I think a lot of us wish we could all be nice, but boy, these are not nice times. And I honestly think about when a soldier goes into battle. If you had a warrior, you know, he can't be nice. He has to fight and kill. And destroy and maim and hurt and injure. Otherwise, you can't be nice to your enemies. It doesn't work that way. And I think that we are so far removed from actually knowing how to fight that we don't sometimes look. I that does not mean that I believe in, look, personally, in my conduct in daily life, believe in bullying and calling people, I don't know, I hate the term bullying because they've twisted that so much. But taking people to task for the things that they do, calling them on the carpet, sometimes ridiculing them when they, Jesus actually ridiculed. You blind guide, you hypocrites, you strain at a gnat and swallow a camel. That wasn't very nice of Jesus when he talked to the religious leaders. I'm just saying we have gotten too nice for our own good, I think. And so I hope that you will watch that, because I think it was really it gave you a lot of insight into the president. You'll either still like him or you won't, but you'll at least have a better understanding of who he is. Since we last spoke, President Trump has announced that Mick Mulvaney is going to be going to Ireland as an envoy, special envoy. Mick is the current chief of staff. Mick was part of the Freedom Caucus. Mick is really, from my perspective, a very reliable, good guy. The president allegedly, reportedly was unhappy with him. I don't know what that's all about. I would say that, you know, two alpha males working together, probably there's going to be trouble. There always is. Not many alpha males can work together, and you know what I mean by that. Men who are just know their own mind, they're strong-willed, they're used to running things, and you put them both in the same room, and generally there are going to be conflicts. I think Mick Mulvaney stayed for a long time and did really an exemplary job. That's my view of it, without knowing all the details. However, President Trump, in Mick Mulvaney's place, has appointed Mark Meadows. Mark, the congressman from North Carolina, who was the founder and the head of the Freedom Caucus until he resigned recently. Mark, I would just say Congressman Meadows is an incredible congressman. He has been incredible. His ability to strategize and think through, and the ability to really make friends with the president a long time ago. When Congressman Meadows was really a Ted Cruz supporter, he is a very strong Christian, Congressman Meadows is. And could I just say, could I interject into that sort of comment that I personally don't think that people are better qualified for public life if they're Christians? No, let me put it this way. Christians are not necessarily, by virtue of being Christian, better qualified. Serious Christians who have the qualifications of leadership or, I don't know, budget or whatever they're called to do, if they happen to be Christians, they are the best at it. If they're serious Christians, the problem is that that descriptor can mean something or it can mean nothing. And I'm afraid that most of the time in Washington, it seems to mean almost nothing. But in the case of Congressman Mark Meadows, I can tell you firsthand that this man is a strong Christian who brings his faith to his position, and it has made him better, powerful, outstanding. I'd say the same thing of Jim Jordan, and they have been great partners, and they've done tremendous. They've been able to accomplish so much with very little. You know, it's like, as God always does, he chooses his Daniels, he chooses his people who stand out in the midst of, they're contrasted in the world in which they live, and they're able to do incredible things. And I think of Mark Meadows and Jim Jordan in that same way. So Mark Meadows is going to be the chief of staff for President Trump, and that's going to be interesting. That's all I can say is that's going to be interesting. Do I think it's a good thing? Yes, I do. Yes, I do. With all the problems in the White House, all the infiltrations and all of the deceits, you know, I think that Mark Meadows will be a great addition. And actually, I hope that it will have an effect on some of the president's choices, like his political endorsements, which I've been very concerned about. I think I told you that at Super Tuesday last week, several really fine candidates who were trying for positions in the primaries did not win because President Trump, at the urging of Kevin McCarthy, who is not a strong conservative, but is the president thinks he's wonderful. I don't share that opinion. But the president does listen to Kevin McCarthy, and on the basis of his advice, the president endorsed several candidates in, I believe, Texas. I'm not sure where else. And the real Trump supporters, who really do support his positions, did not win because the endorsement means so much in so many of these of the red states. And so I'd like to see Mark Meadows have the president's ear on those kinds of things. I don't know if that's going to happen. That won't be his purview, but we'll see. But I view that as a very positive happening, and I want you to be encouraged about that. I want to give you a heads up, because there's a lot of different news today that I will try to get to as much as I can. Mondays are always a challenge because so much has happened. You know, it's, you know, like I said, it's like a fire, a four-alarm fire. Almost every 2 days, you've got so much stuff happening, and it's very hard to keep up with it. So Mondays is worse than others in terms of trying to keep up. So I'm constantly editing what I should spend my time on. And what I want to talk about today is I want to for sure emphasize to you that there are six primaries tomorrow. Now, much is made about the presidential part of these primaries, and that is important. Of course, I think it's very important that you be aware that Bernie Sanders is running against Joe Biden and Tulsi Gabbard, who's still in there. And there will be primaries in Michigan, Missouri, Idaho, Mississippi, North Dakota, and Washington. But it isn't just the presidential primaries. There are candidates who are running in these races. And I think I wish I had more detail on more of these good candidates. I told you it's very hard for me to filter through all 50 states. And so please, could I commission you, because I know you're serious about this. You need to go and Google, use your abilities to search and find out in your state if there are some good conservative candidates. You have family foundations, you have different kinds of organizations that you probably trust in your state. You have our voter guide, by the way, is ivoterguide.com, ivoterguide.com, in which you can find out where candidates stand on the issues and lend your support. But I hope that you don't even wait for that. Now, tomorrow is the primary in those states, Michigan, Missouri, Idaho, Mississippi, North Dakota, and Washington. And see, I can't even tell you in this moment, even though I've looked for it, there's one race that I want to point out to you, and that is the race for a Senate in Michigan. John James is the candidate who ran 2 years ago against Debbie Stabenow and really did, in spite of not having the funds and the resources and the attention from the Republican Party he should have had, he came very close. He did a very admirable job. I don't remember what the numbers were. Maybe they were 10 points apart, but he was an unknown, and she was a very well-known. But this time he's also running a challenge, and John has been an incredible candidate. He actually was at CPAC when I was there last week, and he gave his testimony of sorts, and I thought maybe you would enjoy just hearing the first part of it. This would be clip one.
My name is John James, and I'd like to begin by telling you a little story. I'd like to tell you a story about a little boy who was born in Starkville, Mississippi. He lived directly across the street from Mississippi State University, born in 1941, but he couldn't go there because he was black. Despite growing up in the worst economic inequality and institutional racism that this country has ever known, he refused to allow vulnerability to become victimhood. He never allowed dependency to become his destiny. He paid his way through college. He served honorably in Vietnam. He moved to Detroit in 1971 to start a trucking company with one truck, one trailer, and no excuses, hauling beer back and forth between Detroit and Milwaukee. For the better part of the next decade, he fought government regulation all the way up to the Supreme Court for the right to compete. He worked. He evolved until he was able to provide a life for his family that was previously unimaginable. He grew an idea into a $35 million company, automotive supplier, before a change of management in 2012. That little boy is my father. My father, like so many others who've immigrated from all over the world and from the Jim Crow South for better opportunities, never asked for free stuff. They asked for a fair shot. I am not standing here on this stage because of socialism. I'm standing here because of free enterprise and free will and because self-determination works.
Oh, all right. So that's the first part of it. You know, John actually was he was an Iraqi war veteran, decorated. He also built his company from the foundation that his father had laid. He multiplied it and developed, I think he hired over 100 more employees and increased its net worth incredibly. He's a very conservative candidate. He's running, and that's one of the primaries in Michigan tomorrow. And that's a very, very important thing because the Senate and the House this year are in play for sure. And so I'm going to try to give you an overview when we return about what's at stake and try to get, again, you to look at your own states. Remember, it's Michigan, Missouri, Idaho, Mississippi, North Dakota, and Washington State. That is this week, this Tuesday, this set of primaries. If you're in those states, I would love for you to please do some research and find out if there's some good candidates who need your support tomorrow when you go in to vote. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Maybe you could relate to this. A lot of people think they're stuck with their health plan. It costs too much, or for whatever reason, they just don't like it. The great news, you are not stuck with it. There is a choice. It's called MediShare, and you could save so much. The typical savings for a family is $500 a month. Major difference maker. This is the affordable alternative to health insurance. And just to give you a little more info about MediShare, it's a Christian healthcare sharing ministry. It's worked beautifully for 26 years, has more than 400,000 members, and they've shared over $3 billion of each other's medical bills. So yes, they can help share your needs too. So you're not stuck. There's an excellent alternative. Whether you're single or married, you got a family, MediShare is super flexible. You can choose an option that works for you and start saving lots of money. You can join anytime. They're great to talk to. No pressure. Call 833-44-BIBLE. That's 833-44-BIBLE. 833-44-BIBLE.
8 Days of Hope continues to be the hands and feet of Jesus. The ministry is in need of volunteers as they turn their attention to Nashville. Visit 8daysofhope.com to learn how you can help. Here's 8 Days of Hope President Steve Tiber.
We're looking for people who just want to serve others. You know, you don't have to be super gifted. Every disaster gives an opportunity for a believer to share a glimpse of Jesus Christ. On a moment's notice, your life can change, and you don't know what to do, and all of a sudden you get a knock on your door, and there's a dozen volunteers that have come from all over the country, and homeowners usually, they just start to weep. They're so blown away that volunteers they don't even know would come to their house to help them. That's the hands and feet of Jesus Christ.
Volunteers must be 18 years or older. Food and lodging are provided. Be a part of helping tornado victims in Nashville. Learn more or sign up at 8daysofhope.com.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next.
What do you see for the next generation? Do you see a prospering nation? Do you see hope? The future is ours to create, and Liberty University is driven to train positive influencers for our country and our culture. Our mission is to guide students toward leadership as servants of the people, defenders of freedom, and champions of truth. Discover how you can impact the next generation of champions for Christ by texting GIVE to 839-858.
President Trump says he is moving forward with his plan to cut off federal funding to sanctuary cities, and I say it's about time. Far too many of these so-called sanctuary cities have been turned into hunting grounds for illegal alien predators. The U.S. Second Circuit Court of Appeals in New York overturned a lower court ruling that stopped the administration's initial plans to withhold federal funding. President Trump says it's time for these cities to stop protecting criminals. Without a doubt, sanctuary city policies make our communities less safe. My website's filled with all sorts of stories about American citizens who have been robbed, assaulted, and in some cases killed by illegals on American soil. My only issue is the Justice Department should consider criminal charges against elected leaders who refuse to enforce the law of the land. If an illegal commits a crime in a sanctuary city, that elected leader should face charges too. I'm Todd Starnes.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
So John James is running against incumbent Democrat Gary Peters. That's his opponent in the Michigan primary tomorrow. One of the things he said at CPAC, that we don't have time to play all of this, he said you don't need to go to Venezuela to see where liberal leftist socialist policies have failed their people. You can just come to Michigan and see where we're failing the neighborhoods, where we're forgetting our farms, and where we need to make sure that we have situations that we don't have policies of envy and confiscation, but we have policies that increase access and opportunity for the people. And just to be specific, I alluded to these things, but I wanted to give you the numbers. When he ran against Debbie Stabenow, he won 46% of the vote against her 52%, and she is a well-established Democrat incumbent. She's been there in the position for years. So, and I remember interviewing John, as I recall, when he was running, and many of us thought that he was just a fine candidate, but he just did not get the attention that he deserved nationally. So he is running again, and again he's running against Gary Peters. He graduated from West Point. He was in the Army 8 years as a Ranger Qualified Aviation Officer. And to be specific about his family business, he grew it from $35 million in revenue to $137 million in revenue. So got his MBA from the University of Michigan. That's John James. So I just wanted to be a little bit more specific about that. Meanwhile, in the presidential field, you know that there will be a debate next Sunday night. You know that the primary tomorrow is in those six states that I mentioned, the presidential primary. Bernie Sanders is not happy because he feels like the deck has been stacked against him a little bit. Don't know what would give him that idea, but I'll let him fill in the blanks. Here he is.
The establishment put a great deal of pressure on Pete Buttigieg, on Amy Klobuchar, who ran really aggressive campaigns. Well, I know both of them. They work really, really hard. But suddenly, right before Super Tuesday, they announced their withdrawal. If they had not withdrawn from the race before Super Tuesday, which is kind of a surprise to a lot of people, I suspect we would have won in Minnesota, we would have won in Maine, we would have won in Massachusetts. The turnout may have been a little bit different. But I think what we are doing in this campaign, Chuck, is we are taking on not only the entire political establishment, we're taking on the corporate establishment as well.
So when he mentioned...
Okay, well, that's Bernie Sanders. And he is right about everything happening that just lined up. The Democratic establishment... Man, they pulled the levers. They just did on Super Tuesday. Elizabeth Warren, of course, if she had dropped out, Bernie probably would have won some more of those states and more of those delegates. As it stands, the delegate count is Bernie Sanders, 559, Joe Biden, 637. I don't think that's, you know, that's a lead, but it's really, it's not an insurmountable lead because I think there's 53% more of the delegates to be assigned. So, people are not predicting good things for Bernie Sanders tomorrow, but who can you believe? I don't know, and I'm not rooting for him, by the way. I'm just analyzing. So Hillary Clinton, of course, now is weighing in on Bernie because they're all trying to get rid of Bernie because not because, you know, Mrs. Clinton and Hillary and Bernie Sanders have a lot in common when it comes to policy. Trust me. She was a radical leftist slash whatever you want to fill in the blank to call her before he was. They're about the same age. But Hillary is doing this new, they're doing a cameo, a series on Hillary Clinton on Hulu. It's coming out, I think, this week or next week. And so they've been releasing excerpts from it. And of course, you know, they have her looking beautiful and everything is edited. It's just amazing how they can make you look wonderful and also sympathetic. They had a little clip of Bill Clinton talking about his liaison, shall we say, with Monica Lewinsky and how, you know, he was just under so much pressure. I was just kind of a diversion. I just needed something, you know, to get my mind off of things. And so that was his excuse for his unmentionable intersection with Monica Lewinsky. And it seems so sympathetic. Poor Bill. Gosh, he was under so much pressure. And Hillary Clinton, oh, it was just so awful what she went through. Really, if you know the history of the Clintons, and you know, like I do, from the time they started their political life until he ran for president when he was the governor of Arkansas, the whole idea of Bill Clinton having lots of women was a very, very familiar place for Hillary Clinton. She's the one who led the charge against designing how to destroy and discredit each woman that came into Bill's orbit. They called it the Bimbo Brigade. She was the one who coined the phrase bimbos. But it was really shocking that this thing with Monica. Are you kidding me? These people are master performers, and Hulu is going to help them do that with a soft brush and great lighting. And so that'll be coming out, and you'll be seeing lots of clips of it. But so Hillary weighed in that special on Bernie Sanders, and this is what she said.
Bernie just drove me crazy. He was in Congress for years, years. He had one senator support him. Nobody likes him. Nobody wants to work with him. He got nothing done. He was a career politician. He did not work till he was like 41, and then he got elected to something. It was all just baloney, and I feel so bad that, you know, people got sucked into it.
Yeah, like they get sucked into you and your husband with your baloney, but they do get sucked into it. But see, they're just afraid that Bernie is too, it's too much, Bernie. Be quiet. Stop bragging on, you know, Cuba. And the Soviet Union. By the way, Bill Clinton was a big fan of the Soviet Union, too. Went there when he was a young guy. He's seen in pictures Listen, the Clintons are left of the left. They sold top secrets to the Chinese for financial gain when they were in power. They've done so many things to undermine. Hillary Clinton, as Secretary of State, oversaw the sale of much of our uranium supply to Russians through Canada. Do not think for a minute that. And who did the Russians want to win? Now, they told us that it was, of course, Bill, President Trump. But we know it was Hillary Clinton. We know that the collusion was all about the DNC and Hillary Clinton's campaign, and that's how the dossier came out. The Russians were colluding with the Clintons to defeat President Trump. That's just a fact. And that it's just a fact not well known because, you know, the propaganda of the media over and over again. But that was Hillary on Bernie Sanders. And by the way, just to update you on Bernie Sanders, he just picked an advisor. The advisor's name is, let's see, he's been helping as I don't know if he's a volunteer or someone, that consultant. His name is Philip Agnew. Philip Agnew works as a co-director for Dream Defenders, a group that advocates for the abolishment of prisons, of police, and the end of capitalism, and supports open borders. So that's Bernie Sanders' new hire to be his campaign advisor, just to be clear about how far on the left Bernie Sanders is. And let me add to that, the practical fallout from that can be found in places like this. Remember Chesa Boudin, who is the DA in San Francisco, is of that same ilk. George Soros has been spending millions of dollars to get these radical DAs elected in states like Chicago, the one where the Jussie Smollett case, the Kim Fox, she was one of the George Soros picks, and so there was one in Los Angeles County as well. George Gascon, with the backing of Soros money, was challenging Jackie Lacey, who was elected as the first African-American DA of Los Angeles County. But Jackie actually believes in sending criminals to jail, and so Soros came after her. But George Gascon, who is all about abolishing prisons and police and punishment, and by the way, before he came to L.A., he was the DA in San Francisco, who transformed San Francisco into the homeless, drug and feces capital of the nation. So then he moved to Los Angeles to run. He had the backing of Senator Kamala Harris, but he did not do well. His turnout, numbers were in the low 20s, and so it looks like Jackie Lacey, who actually believes in enforcing the law, will be the winner. So we've had kind of a backlash from that, and I'm very glad about that because these radical prosecutors are wreaking havoc in our big cities. And this is the model that Bernie Sanders and Kamala Harris and others want for the country. It's chaos. It's removing punishments. It's putting criminals back in neighborhoods. It really is horrendous. And there's another story on that that I just have to tell you. This is a complicated story. And so I'll just give you the headlines on this. Remember when the governor of Missouri was forced to resign? His name is Eric Greitens. Allegedly, he took a picture of this lover and threatened her to expose her with this picture. That's the story. But now we know now that was completely fabricated. Kimberly Gardner was the prosecutor. She was the first African-American chief prosecutor. Now, could I just say that this has nothing to do with color? We have horrible people who want to do away with police and who want to do away with the punishment of criminals who are black and white. And we have good people who are black and white, who actually want to enforce the law and don't want to do away with criminal penalties and let criminals out on the street. But Kimberly Gardner happens to be the city, St. Louis's first African-American chief prosecutor. And so she was supported by George Soros, and she went after immediately Eric Greitens. And now investigators have discovered that testimony transcripts and court records obtained by, this is an outlet called Just the News, show that the woman Gardner built her case around, beautician Katrina Sneed, testified she was asked, unsolicited, by Gardner's office to come forward as a witness, and that she was actually reluctant to accuse Greitens because the entire story of a photo on his mobile phone may have been a dream. There's a lot more to that story, but it looks like Eric Greitens is going to be completely exonerated, but he's already gone. And that was a Kimberly Gardner, who was one of these radical prosecutors supported by George Soros. And now, of course, back to this, Bernie Sanders new campaign advisor is in this on the same team, and that's what they have in mind for this country, is complete chaos in law enforcement and the lack of protections for American citizens. It really is very shocking. And then, of course, your other choice, if you're a Democrat, is Joe Biden. And Joe Biden, you know, was out on the campaign trail saying various things. I thought I'd give you a taste of it. This is just a little bit of what he said over the weekend, clip 12.
And turn this primary from a campaign that's about negative attacks into one about what we're for, because we cannot get reelect. We cannot win this reelection. Excuse me. We can only reelect Donald Trump.
All right. So a little confused. I just don't, they can't fix that. And then this is what he said about, invoking Barack Obama's name, which he likes to do. He got a little bit mixed up, and this is what it sounded like, clip 13.
So, folks, you want to nominate a Democrat, a lifelong Democrat, a proud Democrat, an Obama Democrat, join us.
An Obama Democrat, said Joe. An Obama Democrat. Very confused. And it's not going to change. How in the world could it? If it could change you, if there were medicine for that, you would be buying that for your grandparents, for your mothers and your fathers. You'd be buying it for yourself. But there's just nothing that can fix that. And this is going to be a really interesting campaign with Bernie Sanders and Joe Biden. President Trump, at the town hall that I mentioned last Thursday night, spoke about Biden, and I think it's pretty interesting. Let's listen.
So looking at the Super Tuesday results, are you worried the Democratic Party is unifying around Joe Biden? That will take away your arguments about the Democrats being too left-wing and too socialist?
Well, he's left-wing, and he's got all people that are left-wing, and in many ways he's worse than Bernie. Look at what he did with guns. He put Beto in charge of guns. Beto wants to get rid of guns, right? So that's a bad stance, and he's got a lot of people that are left-wing, and they'll be running the government. He's not going to be running anything. If he ever got in, they'll be running the government. They've got people further left-wing than what Bernie has. So going to be good. It wouldn't be good for Wall Street, I can tell you that. Plus, if you look at his taxes, he's going to raise taxes incredibly. He's going to raise taxes more than Bernie. I looked at, and he's open about it. Bernie doesn't like to talk about it. I mean, Joe Biden, his tax increases they're staggering. It's ridiculous. He'll destroy everything that's been built.
All right, that wasn't the town hall. Sorry, that was in the Oval Office, or one of the offices in the White House, and I think that was Jonathan Swain asking the questions. And President Trump is saying that Joe Biden is worse than Bernie on taxes and guns, and he gives the reasons. And, you know, it is true that Joe Biden is not conservative. He's not moderate. And he, in his own words, as I played for you to Chris Wallace week before last, not this past Sunday, but the Sunday before that, said very clearly, I'm not a moderate. I'm not a moderate. Why do you keep calling me a moderate? I'll give you an example. Joe Biden has just, on social media, he released this statement on Saturday night. Transgender equality is the civil rights issue of our time. There is no room for compromise when it comes to basic human rights. So that's Joe Biden. Now, you know, did Joe write that sentence? Probably not. But someone on his team did. And, of course, Joe is not good on these issues anyway. If he could write it, he probably would have said that. Again, transgender equality is the civil rights issue of our time. Men who think they're women and women who think they're men, that's the civil rights issue of our time. Those of you in the black community, think about that. Think about that. That's a comparison to the struggles you had as a black American or black in Britain. We could go back to there or... that somehow that's the same struggle. In terms of scope and size, there's no comparison. And certainly we could argue in terms of issue, there's no comparison between the skin color that God has created you with and your decision that you want to be some sex besides how God created you. There's no comparison, and it's just wrong to make that comparison. But people been doing it for so long now that I think people get confused. But bottom line, Joe Biden is no conservative, and President Trump is right that if he gets elected, it will not be Joe running the store. It will be people as far on the left as Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton. All right, so there you go. I'll be back right after this. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The way of a fool is right in his own eyes. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Minute. Longtime host of Hardball on MSNBC, Chris Matthews, abruptly announced his forced retirement on television. He was given 3 minutes to read prepared remarks before being replaced in the very same episode. This comes after a former guest accused Matthews of insensitive comments in the past. It's noteworthy that Matthews wasn't forced out when the comments were made, but only after he became increasingly critical of Bernie Sanders and socialism. MSNBC is the network of radical revolutionaries, and just like Marxist dictators, they will not tolerate dissent from their regressive objectives. Chris Matthews is an example in the media.
Listen each weekday from 5 to 6 p.m. Central for the Hamilton Corner with Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
I refer to your part-time jobs as what you do outside of your home, outside of your family, to generate an income for your family. Your full-time job is what you do within your family. We're on the go consistently, people are hustling, trying to get it. And I just want to remind everybody to whoa, pump the brakes. Make sure that we are not neglecting our families in the process.
Tune in to the Hamilton Quarter, weekdays at 5 p.m. Central on American Family Radio.
Show up at your full-time job, ready to work.
To sharpen the biblical worldview of Christians and to share the good news of Jesus Christ, that is the mission of the Christian Worldview Radio program. I'm host David Wheaton, inviting you to join us this Saturday morning at 9 Eastern, 8 Central, as we discuss all matters of life and faith from a decidedly biblical perspective. The Christian Worldview, Saturday mornings at 9 Eastern, 8 Central, right here on American Family Radio.
Brian Fisher here with today's Life and Liberty Minute. Psalm 23 tells us that sometimes, by God's grace, we lie down in green pastures next to quiet waters. Life is peaceful, tranquil, and serene. But other times, we must walk through the valley of the shadow of death, where things are dark and dangerous. The assurance of Scripture is that you are not alone in that valley. Your shepherd is walking with you, right there beside you, even though you don't see him. With his rod, he will drive away the spiritual forces of darkness which seek to overwhelm you. With his staff, he will lift you up when you fall and bring you through that dangerous valley to a broad and open place. He will push back the powers of darkness so they can only watch as you enjoy table fellowship with the Lord of glory. His goodness and mercy will follow you indeed all the days of your life.
Catch Brian Fisher on Focal Point, weekday afternoons at 105 Central on American Family Radio.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. President Trump is cleaning house at last. After more than 3 years of being sabotaged by Obama holdovers, establishment Republicans, and even some overtly never-Trumper individuals inside his administration, he is creating vacancies and filling them with experienced, capable people who actually want to help him succeed. A case in point was the singularly transformative appointment Mr. Trump made last Friday with his designation of Representative Mark Meadows as White House Chief of Staff. By so doing, the president has secured the services of a principled conservative with proven leadership skills and integrity undiminished by his extensive Washington experience, someone he can unhesitatingly trust for sage political and policy counsel. Donald Trump and his administration will not be the only beneficiaries of Mark Meadows' important new role. The United States of America and all her people will benefit massively as well. This is Frank Affney.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
You know, our hearts do go out to Tennessee and to all those victims. 25, not to the victims. The victims are, well, yes, the ones that died. You know, that's over for them in this life. But their families, of course, are grieving. And the mess that is left after the tornado and the heartbreak of so much loss. But we came across an interview that was with CBS correspondent David Begnon. And I think it was a Tennessee station, and I just wanted you to hear it because I found it just a glimpse of a redemption in the midst of all of that. So let's listen.
David Begnaud is the lead national correspondent for CBS News. And David, you're back in New York City now, but you've been on the ground in Tennessee for the last couple of days. What did you maybe see or hear that will haunt you in the days to come?
I will never forget hearing the story of the father and the young boy who were thrown from their home and found about 50 yards away in the tree line. I'll never forget the couple who survived, who said, "We were guided by the lightning. That was the only light we had at 2:30 in the morning. So as the lightning would flash in the sky, we would sort of find our way to the neighbor's house." I will never forget hearing the beeping. I'll never forget the neighbor who said, "When I came out of my house, the first and only thing I heard were people screaming for help everywhere."
You've covered some of the biggest natural disasters, not just in the country, but around the world. Hurricane Maria, one of the most significant topics of your reporting. You've seen some really bad stuff, and you've seen the way that people react to these tragedies. Is there anything unique or special in the way that Tennesseans have reacted to this tornado?
There was a resilience that seemed to bond them together, which was inspiring to me. Every single person that I spoke to mentioned God. I will never forget Eric Groomer, who was the other Eric's neighbor, who said, "How are we here? How do you explain this? How do you explain that every single piece of my home is gone and I'm still here? And the only thing that is sitting on the slab of my home is the carpet that we sat on in the closet that is no longer there." Nearly every person mentioned God.
I just wanted you to hear that. And this is the thing. Sometimes in the midst of covering all the news and listening about the coronavirus, which I have lots to say about that, I don't know if I'll get to it. It's everywhere. You know, we're all going to die. You know, we're all going to die of coronavirus if you listen to the news, including Fox. I don't believe that for a minute. I don't believe it for a minute. I think it is overblown. I think there are forces that are trying to depress and discourage. They are constantly there. And this is the world in which we live. They love talking about death and destruction. And they love having you upset about it all the time. And all of us. They love talking about the potential crashes of everything. But in the midst of all of this, a real problem, like a tornado hitting Tennessee and destroying so many homes and killing so many people, you see the people of Tennessee who are deeply steeped. They're part of the Bible Belt. They're part of what is ridiculed as, you know, the center of the heart of America, the flyover country. Those people whose their very DNA, they've been bred and born and suckled at the milk of the Word of God. And so their fallback is they trust God. They know Him. And this reporter, I don't know where he's coming from, but the power of God comes through. The power of redemption and hope comes through. It shines in the midst of such devastation. And I just thank God for the people of Tennessee and the fact that they're not too proud to know and acknowledge that there is a God who ultimately has the authority over all men, over coronavirus, all the heads of state, the kings and queens who come and go, the people in Washington who think they are so important. It is God who is omniscient, omnipotent, you know, the creator of heaven and earth. It is Him. It is not us. We deal with these earthly things because we have to, because we live in this world, and we have to make the best that we can of it, but we cannot lose our perspective. And the people of Tennessee have just really, through that reporter, have really given us some perspective this morning. So I wanted to bring that to you. Well, yes, so there are a lot of other things. You remember, we talked about the elections. I'm talking about them still because they are tomorrow, the primary, the upcoming primary. It's not the end of them. It is a presidential primary tomorrow, but it is also a primary for candidates. There's Michigan and Missouri and Idaho and Mississippi and North Dakota and Washington State. And it does matter. These primaries matter more for conservative candidates than liberal ones because conservative candidates can only win if they get enough votes in the primary. If they can't prevail in the primary, then they're gone and forgotten. And in the primary, it's a smaller pool of voters so that conservative voters can make a bigger difference in a primary. Once they get to the general, forget it. If you just decided you're going to wait and vote in the general and you're a Trump supporter and you're going to vote for Donald Trump and you think that's enough, you're just so mistaken about that. You can see what havoc has been wreaked in the House of Representatives and in the Senate by such horrible candidates. And so that's why we have to be diligent, down ballot, and that means the primaries. That's when we must be the most active. And I honestly, frankly, I'm frustrated. I feel like conservatives are dropping the ball on this. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe things are happening that I just can't see. But I'm urging you, yay, begging you to look to see in your state who's running, who the candidates are, and use the sources that you have to find the best candidates. And let me recommend our voter guide. It's ivoterguide.com, ivoterguide.com, and you can enter your zip code and it will take you from there. All right, so back to the practicals, though. Elsie Stefanik is a Republican congresswoman from New York. She's new. And you may remember that she was front and center on the impeachment hearings in the House. And just to jog your memory a little bit, let's listen to this clip from her interaction with Devin Nunes, Adam Schiff, and her own voice in the Congress. Let's listen.
I know, Ms. Stefanik, you had a few quick questions for the ambassador. I'll yield to you, Ms. Stefanik.
Thank you, Mr. Nunes. Ambassador Yovanovitch, thank you for being here today.
The gentlewoman will suspend.
What is the interruption for this time? It is our time.
The gentlewoman will suspend. You're not recognized. Mr. Nunes, you are minority counsel.
I just recognized.
Under the House Resolution 660, you're not allowed to yield time except to minority counsel.
The ranking member yielded time to another member of Congress.
No, that is not accurate.
You're gagging the young lady from New York.
Ambassador Yovanovitch, I want to thank you for being here today.
Gentlewoman will suspend. You're not recognized.
This is the fifth time you have interrupted members of Congress, duly elected members of Congress.
The gentlewoman will suspend.
Mr. Chair, we control the time. It's been customary to this committee that whoever controls the time can yield to whoever they wish. If we have members of Congress that have a few questions, it seems appropriate that we'd be able to let Ms. Stefanik ask her questions.
Ms. Nunes, you or minority counsel recognized?
All right. Mr. Castor, you're recognized.
All right. So that, you know, that was, if that doesn't make you angry, what's happening there is Adam Schiff, of course, is ignoring Nunes, who has every right to turn over his time to Elsie Stefanik. And then he keeps interrupting when Elsie Stefanik wants to ask a question, because she was actually very, very effective when she was grilling a previous witness before that committee. And so I think that's why Adam Schiff shut her up. Okay, so that's Elsie. I just wanted you to have some reference point on that. Well, she and her husband were at a grocery store over the weekend. And when she got back, when they got back in their car, she had a note in her car that said, "Rot in hell, fascist pig." So she posted this, and she basically says, "It's truly sad that the radical far left cannot see beyond their vicious hate." This vile, anonymous note was left in our car. All right, so that's the latest example. Remember that Republican congressmen were targeted by a shooter. Steve Scalise was the victim. He didn't die, but he nearly died. And the shooter was targeting Republican congressmen at that ball field in Alexandria, Virginia, just about, it seems, maybe 2 years ago. So it's a very, very, very dangerous time, not only for congressmen, but also for people who are just supporting President Trump. And I want to give you an example of the recent flurry of outbreaks of violence, just so you know what it is you're dealing with. In Florida, and I think I talked about this, but I want to repeat it in case I didn't. This Gregory Tim, who's 27, bystanders said there was a tent, and it was set up for a Republican voter registration. And a witness to the event said that Gregory drove up and was smiling at them and like acting like he was, you know, a supporter. And as soon as they sort of smiled back, he accelerated his vehicle and ran into the tent. He ran over the tables. And, of course, he could have killed someone. He didn't kill anyone, thank God. But he's been charged with 2 counts of aggravated assault on a person 65 years and older and 1 count of criminal mischief, driving with a suspended license. He told deputies he did not like President Trump, and someone had to take a stand. Then in Windham, New Hampshire, which is where the first in the nation primary took place last Tuesday. This would be, that was the week before, not Super Tuesday, but the week before that. A man allegedly, and of course by we can see, did assault a 15-year-old Trump supporter and 2 adults. His name is Patrick Bradley. He's 34. He was charged with simple assault, but he hit the kid, 15 years old. The kid had just, he was wearing a Make America Great Again hat. He slapped him, the kid, across the face. And he assaulted two other adults who tried to intervene and save the child, the kid, the 15-year-old. The 15-year-old's mother was on Fox and Friends, and she talked about how her son loved history and politics and how he was just a sweet kid who wanted to help. And so that happened. Did you hear about that? I don't know. And then over the weekend, protesters at the University of California in Santa Cruz smashed a college Republican's information table. I saw the video of this. It looked to me, look, I don't know this for sure, but it looked to me to be a lesbian because it looked like a guy with bosoms. I don't know how else to say it. Well, it could have been someone who, you know, could be someone who was transgender. That also is the possibility. So this person tore up placards, ripped down the signage, tried to tear down the booth, spit on a 13-star Betsy Ross American flag, and said, I think this is the person assaulting the people in the booth saying, I think this guy's trying to assault me, the person said, laughing, as someone tries to grab an American flag away from him. I'm not sure it's a him. The man attempting to take back the flag later in the video falls to the ground during the struggle. So we're not sure if that person was charged with any crimes. And then you may remember that at Arizona State University, this was on February the 5th. We've actually played this clip for you, but I want you to hear it again. This was a Students for Trump at Arizona University setting up a table. And this is how they were greeted by a student. Let's listen.
Slash his throat! Republican! Suck my balls!
Say that one more time.
Slash Republican Trump! Slash fascist Trump! Get the fascist!
Have a good one.
All right, slash the fascist, slash Republican's throats. We were having a discussion yesterday with friends. Does that not sound demonic to you? Does seem demonic. It does. It's just that the voice and everything, and it seems to be happening more and more. And so last week, a retired New York City police officer, Daniel Sprague, said he got punched in the face at a Tennessee bar. He was wearing a birthday hat and a shirt with Trump-like slogans. They said things like, make 50 great again, and a shirt that said, making America great since 1970. All right, so this is the deal. You wonder why a retired New York police officer didn't defend himself, because it was a female. Came up from behind him, punched me in the face, and then grabbed my hat off my head and yelling, how dare you? And then the policeman told others that he thought that the woman was wearing a ring or had a set of keys in her hand when she lunged at him, because the wound was deep and went to the bone. So then there was another one in Florida. A man was sentenced to 90 days in jail and 1 year of supervised probation after slapping the bill of a man's Make America Great Again hat before telling the man to go back to Russia, you blanking communist, and spitting on him. I'm telling you those things just to help you understand how wicked. Now, here's the thing. You can react by being intimidated. Those are pretty scary stories. You can be intimidated and not do anything. I think that's some people's reaction. Or you can do something. And you know what I think about it, don't you? I'd say put pedal to the metal, ladies and gentlemen, and do what you need to do to stand up for this country. It's not about you. It's not about President Trump. It's about destroying the foundations of the country and letting lawlessness reign. So let's put pedal to the metal. Look up your states. Those of you who live in Michigan, Missouri, Idaho, Mississippi, North Dakota, and Washington. Also those of you in Florida with upcoming primaries and other states, so I can't remember in the moment. Look up your states already and get involved with these candidates. Give them money, campaign. Let's fight back, okay? Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.